About 11 o'clock. Καλημέρα. Teddy Dimitriadis, Kostas Pedikakis, Petros Vamvakas, and not sure who we've got on the phone. Manny, Stamati, καλημέρα.
Hello.
Καλημέρα.
Σταμάτης.
Καλημέρα, παιδιά.
Καλώς τα παιδιά.
Λοιπόν.
Well, Manny, everything is down today.
Yeah, what's going on this last couple of weeks, Manny? This last week, talk to us.
Well, today,
we talked about it last week. I mean, we said it. We said that, you know, and for the past 2 weeks, we said we were on stable ground, that we were opening ourselves up to weakness, which is clearly evident from the last couple days over the weekend and including this morning's rout. So you got the S&P roughly about down about 75 points here, and you made a lower low. So these are definitely troublesome times, but I don't think it lasts. This actually could very easily be a short-term bottom for the market, as it's traced back quite aggressively. The key will be, can we hold on to the lows, and can we get some buying pressure from the bulls? If not, my guess is that we might actually even take a trip down to 4,000 in the S&P. We're currently at 4,111, around there. But you could have another 100 points of downside here. But this is exactly what we talked about the setup was, that we were going to have some short-term weakness coming out of a really strong March and April, and that essentially that would lead the way to a bull rally going through the summer months, which we think will be lull. It will be sideways trading with probably some appreciation, but nothing exciting. And then we go into the back half of the year where we expect volatility to pick back up again. I think that you will bounce over the next week or two from these levels, and that should set you up for some time of a summer rally. And then that's when, we get back in September, October, that's when people will be glued to the screen again to take a look at what does the rest of the year look like, what has changed in terms of Fed policy following the Jackson Hole Symposium, which will take place in August, and where does that leave us in terms of taper talk? Do we raise rates at the back end of 2022? Do we raise rates sometime in the middle of 2022? Is the inflation narrative transitory? If not, does that cause pressure on the Fed to raise rates sooner, which would obviously bring a weakness to the market? So that is kind of the world that we're navigating right now. But this is pretty much exactly how we thought it was going to play out.
Well, we know now what's going to happen until the end of the year. I guess we're done.
Not exactly. I mean, you do have geopolitical concerns coming about again. You have, some socialistic pressures here. And the number one question investors are asking themselves is this as good as it gets? We talked last week about the blowout numbers from tech companies, and here you have the tech companies leading the way down. So you have serious profit taking place across the world right now on some of these large cap tech names, which is causing this weakness.
Yeah, I mean, you saw, I think it was a specific company, Palantir, Peter Thiel, you know, one of the premier names in tech. Mm-hmm. They reported 50% revenue growth, and the stock is down 15%.
Yep. Because don't forget, I mean, the stock's always a forward-looking mechanism. So we are pricing out 2 to 3 years away. That's how the stock market works. So all this great news and these terrific beats on earnings reports, they were thoroughly priced into the market sometime in 2019 and 2020. So now that you reach those levels, where do we go now? What do the next coming quarters look like for these companies? Does the work from home model drastically change where these tech companies now lose profits due to the reopening thesis? So that is the number one question. And then add in the fear of inflation and the narrative that keeps getting spurred on a daily basis that is it transitory or otherwise, and you have weakness.
On a different, a little bit different topic, these cyber attacks all of a sudden have become very, it was the cyber attack in this energy company, Colonial. Is this something that can really be disruptive to the big economy?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's the number one fear. What we know based off, and Petro can confirm this, what we know about geopolitical events right now is that the way of the world has changed. We are no longer in hot war, and we're certainly closer to cold war, but not truly cold war. What we're doing is we are practicing malicious events, whether it's cybersecurity hacking, financial manipulation, These are the new arenas of battle in this global economy. So this is something that is not going to slow down. We saw it take place since 2016 with interventions in our elections. It's something that's going to be on the forefront of companies and political minds for the next decade and to come. This is the new arena, and this is how we're going to be going to battle against companies, industries, and sovereign nations.
And you don't think that is going to stop, right?
No, no, by no means.
Yeah, but I don't, you know, just to interject here, yeah, I agree with that. I think, you know, we're like in this, I'd say this age of anger as well. You know, I've used that term a couple of times this morning, and we see all these little pockets popping up everywhere, and I think it's just that we're at the beginning of, you know, a troublesome time. And if you see what has gone on the last couple of, last 48 hours or so with the bombings and the situation in Jerusalem, and I think, you know, the situation that we don't necessarily pay a lot of attention to is in the Maldives with the attack on the former president there. And that's, like, to me, that's an overlap in the middle of the Indian Ocean that has to do with environmental politics. It has to do with China versus India. It has to do with secular and religious groups. And it's all happening, like, in this side area that's not necessarily in the center, but I think that's indicative of the politics that are coming up. And it's going to really have a lot of effects in ways that we don't measure right now.
Certainly. I think that, and Petro, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think this goes along with history. I mean, with the changing of the guard, you have countries right now testing the water,
yeah,
figuring out what does the next 4 years look like, what does the next 8 years look like, what can we get away with, who's our true allies, who are our true partners. So I think that you're going to continue to see muddling in the water as we figure out who's going to retain power and really be the global leader now. Luckily for us, it seems that people are being turned off by China and that they're actually coming back towards the United States and partnering with us. So hopefully that remains to be the case, but I think only time will tell which direction other partners decide to go.
Yeah, everybody's uncertain of the landscape. So it's like, I think it's not just an issue of, like, you know, the U.S., you know, the shifting, the question that we've been having about the U.S. foreign policy in the last 15 years. But I think it has to do with also with a pandemic, and it also has to do with what's going on in the IA world, what's going on with all kinds of different means. And we are in a watershed event period, and, you know, I don't think you can calculate it the way that we used to before. So we're using the materials and the focus of analysis of yesterday to analyze what's happening tomorrow. And I think that's where, you know, and even the rest of the world is gravitating to the U.S. because that is the most proximate source of power. But I think Afghanistan is a good indication, you know, with the U.S. policy there. I think what's going on in Jerusalem is a good indication of what might be happening and how those things are really going to shift around. And everybody's really uncertain about the U.S. right now. I don't think the U.S. is giving out that signal. Yes, it's not Donald Trump, but, you know, we have to look at what's going on in the U.S. internally as well. I think that's part of geopolitics right now, not just domestic politics.
Certainly.
Yeah. Manny, we talked a little bit earlier on the program about supplies and demands of late and the cost of merchandise going up across the board. Many instances, you know, the demand is a lot greater than the supply, and things are going up all over the place. What's the effects of that this week for you guys?
Oh, I mean, it's the same story we've been talking about for over a month now. I mean, it's just supply shortages. Mm-hmm. You can't get semiconductors, you can't get steel, you can't get lumber, you can't get grains, can't get pork, can't get beef, can't get chicken. It's everywhere you look.
Oh, man, and I'm so hungry right now.
Jesus, Manny.
Manny, you're on a roll, I love you.
And Manny, I'm going to lose weight.
What else?
Listen, I got lamb for Chris for
exactly.
What about hot dogs?
No, if you look across, it's going across. Every country's facing it. Every company's facing it. We read through the reports last week where we talked about different industries having different cost pressures, whether it's from supply or from labor. Mm-hmm. So it's riddled across not just this economy but the global economy. And the key thing is that again, this goes back to the inflation theme, is it transitory or not? How quickly can these supply lines get back in order? My guess is it's going to take slower than people think. I mean, the issue with semiconductors is the fact that these plants aren't something you can build overnight. They're like a $6 to $10 billion investment and riddled with protection for intellectual property. So it's not something you can just flick a switch and get these things back online. We know that, you know, Toyota has come out and said that they're going to produce 2.5 to 5 million fewer vehicles this year. That's a massive hit to their profit margin. So that is across the board on all industries. So the real question is how fast can supply lines get back in order? If it takes longer, then this inflation theme continues to play out. Prices go up, they get passed on to the consumer. That could put the economy in troublesome waters as we try to recover and reopen. So it's really a story of how quickly can we get supply lines organized again and back to producing at 2019 pre-COVID levels. I think it's going to take longer than people expect, and I think that you're going to continue to see shortages through the remainder of the year. Our hope is that when we get into 2022, these things have been, you know, sorted out. But that will be something that's a question that remains to be answered, and only time will tell.
And that creates political pressure, right? I mean, you
of course, that because creates... we're all fighting for the same good.
Exactly.
We're seeing it right now with the vaccine.
Yeah.
You know, there's plenty of accusations that the U.S. is hoarding vaccines that we're not sharing with the rest of the world. So just take it from that perspective and then go down the totem pole. It's a fight for goods across all industries, all countries. So, there's going to be political turmoil that gets spilled out of this.
Exactly. I mean, I think that's something we saw about a decade ago, you know, and I think that's the biggest fear on the periphery. And even you saw with the Europeans and AstraZeneca, that game that's being played with AstraZeneca, not getting any orders for the second shot and really shipping it out to the developing world. And a lot of those things are really problematic.
Yep.
What else? Manny, good news.
Pfizer, 12 to 15 years old, is going to get rolled out. Yeah. I mean, we knew that was going to happen. We knew that the studies looked good and that it was going to be taking place, but nonetheless, it's still beneficial. So let's continue to get vaccinated. Let's get people back in school. Let's get extracurricular activities working. Let's get child care there available for parents that need to get back to work. So it's a great outcome. Again, much faster than anyone expected. And it's, you know, an award and a pat on the back to the scientific community for getting us to this point. By all means, it was much faster than anyone ever anticipated. So that's got to be, you know, the good news of the week is that, you know, we're one step closer again. And hopefully now we can potentially even vaccinate those that are below the age of 12 and really make sure that, you know, there was an interesting study that with child vaccinations, you could really cause a pause in these variants. So hopefully that's beneficial in the long run.
Yeah, we were discussing earlier. If you want a vaccine right now, and if you live in, you know, within the sounds of this radio station's voice, you can just walk in and get a vaccination right now. Commonwealth, no matter what, has done a great job, and pretty quickly, if you may, you know, I mean, we're one of the only states that actually has the walk-in available right now.
And remember the criticism that was laid.
Well, we were all laid on.
You know, the whole idea of, you know, how you have to really be patient and roll some of these things out. And I think that we need to remember that patience, as, you know, I agree with Manny that there are things that on the horizon that are going to be really bumpy. So we need to develop that patience moving forward.
Yeah.
I don't know if I want children below 12 years old to be vaccinated.
That's another conversation in itself. Not on this platform, not right now. Gentlemen,
when that debate comes up, you got to just leave it to science. I mean, they're not going to push something forward that isn't going to be beneficial. So if the math comes out and the science comes out and says that no, the youngest that we can vaccinate is 12 years old due to fears of whatever it may be, then that's the answer, and you move forward in that direction. But you got to rely on the information that we're being put forward by the scientific community.
Okay.
No, I mean, go
with the science. You know, that's you know, I'm vaccinated. I went with the science. You know, but anyway,
that's right.
And a lot of people telling me to do so, and I did, and I feel good now, and I'm ready to go. Manny, you ready to go? We gotta go.
But you don't know how long this vaccine will last.
Manny, when are you coming in studio so we can do this live? So we can, you know, You ready to
we
come
keep up? Saying it, but you know, I gotta find a day. The problem is Tuesdays is usually my day in the office.
I can imagine.
Or one of my days in the office. So yeah. I'm in Concord right now, so it puts a little bit of a schedule bind to That's get there right. Tuesday morning. But you know, we can do a different day.
Yeah, we'll figure it out at some point anyway. It'd be just nice to get things back to normal. Manny, Stamati, any
one
closing?
Other,
go ahead,
one
Manny.
I have one other closing thought in regards to taxes. And what's being talked about right now in terms of capital gains and everything else,
yep.
There's a little bit more information out there. So what the Republicans have put forward is a $600 million bill. Obviously, the Democrats are looking for something closer to $4 trillion, $1.8 trillion in traditional infrastructure, and then another $2 trillion in what they're calling soft infrastructure, which would be child care and elder care. I think that getting these done is going to be incredibly challenging. So, yes, I do think that taxes will go up. But corporate tax rates probably go up to 25% instead of 28%. I think that they're going to find some middle ground there. And I think that individual taxes will increase, but not to the level that people are speculating about right now. I don't think that they're going to have the political power in Congress to get this done in the way that they want to. And that you're probably going to have some middle ground where the bill probably ends up looking maybe below $1 trillion, maybe below, you know, something around those numbers. So there's a big gap there. There is going to be an increase, but it's nowhere near going to be the level that was originally projected by this administration.
Yeah, we talked
so
briefly.
So who's going to be on a higher tax bracket, Bill or Melinda Gates?
I don't know. I guess we have to see how the divorce settles out and who comes out with more money.
Oh, my God, yeah. Manny, same thing with the capital gain. You think they're going to meet somewhere in the middle on that, too, closing out?
I don't think they're going to be able to do anything on capital gains. I think that they're, at best they'll be able to do something with individual tax rates and with the corporate tax rate, but I don't think they'll have the political power to move the needle on capital gains. I think they stay the same where they are, and I think the pass-through tax that private equities receive are also probably going to remain in place.
Mm-hmm. All over it, Manny, as always. Closing comments for our Tuesday audience.
That's it. That's all I got. I mean, that was what I wanted to articulate to the audience today. I mean, it's a beautiful day. It looks like we're making a turn. So that's it. So I wish everyone a beautiful week. Get outside today and enjoy it. It's going to be a good day. So. That's what I got.
Thank you.
I mean, I agree. I mean, like, I think you have to look at those positive lines out there. But I also think that, you know, inside the Republican Party, you have to see what's going on there as far as this economic decisions being made. The political scene for me inside is really, really unsettling right now. And the president is laying out an agenda that's trying to, like, you know, appease his left wing. I don't know if he's able to do it. He certainly won't be able to pass this massive amount of infrastructure funding that he has in mind. I see a troubling political scene coming up.
I couldn't agree more.
Yep.
I think that if you look at what the statistics show is, you know, Biden was elected as moderate, and he needs to get back more to those moderate type of ideologies instead of going further to the left. I think that if Trump ran against any other person on the stage that wasn't Biden, considered a moderate, Trump probably wins.
Yeah.
But due to the moderate beliefs, that's what brought Joe Biden into the presidency. I think he needs to get closer to that. And I also think that the Democrats can lose the House.
Yeah.
And I think the Republicans are well aware of that. And they're not going to give up any political victories or secession right now.
Yeah.
So they are going to go to battle. I see very little bipartisanship taking place. And I think that it's going to be extremely challenging for him to put the policies in place that he's projected.
Yeah.
And I think that's why you end up with some kind of middle ground just to move the needle. But then the Republicans are coming for the House. It's debatable on whether they get the Senate, and they're coming back, and they're looking forward to stealing power again. So they're not going to secede any victories to the Democrats right now.
Yeah, I mean, Biden has put the full load on the table, and you see what's going on in the Republicans with Liz Cheney. I mean, those are not really good indicators if you have nothing to negotiate after that. So
that's right.
We're at the extremes, I think.
I agree.
Gentlemen,
I agree.
Great conversation. Manny, as always, thank you. Stamati, any closing comments?
Who is the lawyer for Bill and Melinda Gates? That's what I want to
say. That's that. Stamati, yeah, I was going to say that, honestly. They will make the money.
Yeah. I mean, how do you create a foundation? I mean, that's it has to be the first, right? I mean, you know, we know, I mean, it, how to split an asset and, you know, the stock and the house and, you know, who keeps the dog. I get all that. But how do you split a foundation?
I guess they, I don't know. They said the foundation. They're not going to.
They don't touch the foundation.
They're not
going to
touch the foundation.
Yeah, they said they're not splitting the foundation. That they're remaining. They're going to stay in their key positions, and that they're going to continue to work together.
Oh yeah, that's going to work. Yeah. Oh yeah, they're going to have a lovely board meeting.
They'll turn it over to the Clintons.
That's a good one.
Attaboy. Attaboy,
Professor.
Attaboy, Petro. Attaboy. On that note, guys, thank you very much. We're up against the clock. Manny Frangidakis, Stamatis Sastra, every Tuesday at 11 o'clock, and Petro and Costa and myself. So, gentlemen, be well. Thank you very much. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. We are Grecian Echoes on a Tuesday.